In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We are continually watching the cryptocracy's big moves in the Great Reset while the goalposts of science are wheeled around the field as media messaging shifts and confuses COVID protection protocol. This is causing people to bicker and shame each other. While this is going on, the pharmaceutical companies are profiting in the billions from their shots. Yet in the United States and Canada, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and monoclonal antibodies are restricted. The cryptocracy have stepped out from the shadows, and their activities of manipulation and deceit are in full view of the public. Fortunately, more people have recently learned what's really happening behind the veils of this genocidal horror show. We hear a roundup of voices this hour from Dr. Christina Parks, Dr. Brian Artis, Dr. Charles Hoffe, attorneys Tom Rentz, and David Helm. Let's have a listen.
Hello, my name is Dr. Christina Parks. I received my PhD in cellular and molecular biology right here in the state of Michigan from University of Michigan Medical School. And so I'm very well versed in the science of both these mRNA, gene therapy, vaccines, this kind of technology, as well as what a vaccine is designed to do in the body, what it can do, what it can't do, and the fact that this is extremely complex science that has been oversimplified in the media to basically take away our freedom of choice. What I want to address today in this limited time is the fact that vaccine requirements and mandates are based on the faulty assumption that the vaccines in question prevent transmission of the pathogen, right? Does the vaccine for DTaP prevent transmission? No. Does the vaccine for flu prevent transmission? No. Do the vaccines for COVID prevent transmission? No. In fact, they were never designed to do that. All right, so you're asking, what about this 95% effectiveness? If you look at those clinical trials, they do not say that they prevent transmission. They expressly say that they're measuring whether they attenuate symptoms. So they're 95% effective based on their clinical trials at attenuating symptoms for the first variant, which is essentially gone in our population. Right now, the predominant variant is the Delta, and CDC Director Walensky basically said that these vaccines have no ability to prevent infection by and transmission of the Delta variant. So our policy needs not to be built on the hope of what we think something we want it to do, but what the data actually tell us. So do the vaccines prevent the virus from infecting and replicating in the nose and nasopharynx? No. They've only been shown to prevent that replication in the lungs. They're different. The mucosa is very different than the lungs. It's very different than the blood. You inject it to the blood, you make antibodies in your blood. The virus isn't infecting your blood. It's infecting your mucosa, and you don't produce any IgA to neutralize it. In fact, recent studies have shown that the vaccinated, especially with the Delta variant, and the unvaccinated have similar amounts of virus in their nose and throat. In Barnstable, Massachusetts, the CDC tracked an outbreak of 469 cases of COVID. 74% occurred in fully vaccinated, and 4 out of 5 of those hospitalized were vaccinated. All right, so maybe they are mandating this because they just didn't know with the COVID. And so my main complaint is with our health agencies and the CDC, who basically know better and are misleading the public. So let's look at DTaP, which the scientists and the CDC have known since 2014, that the acellular pertussis vaccine does not prevent people from getting infected with the pertussis bacteria and passing it to others. In fact, it was never designed to do that. The vaccine was designed to neutralize the pertussis toxin. Pertussis, we know it as whooping cough. It can be fatal for children under 6 months. So neutralizing this toxin saves lives, all right? I'm not going to debate that. But what it doesn't do is neutralize the bacteria. So what happens is fully vaccinated children go to daycare, they pick up that bacteria, and they come home and they give it to their newborn brother or sister. They get deathly ill, and they go to the hospital. Hopefully, our medical professionals are able to save them. But who do they blame? Now the CDC is blaming anti-vaxxers for the limitations of this vaccine design. I suggest that they be transparent and tell parents that although it is preventing severe disease in their children, it is not preventing transmission, because we have created a whole class of asymptomatic pertussis carriers who are increasing the disease. Now, the old DTP vaccine that many of you who are my age or older got did prevent transmission. When we switched to the safer acellular version, they knew that it was never designed to prevent transmission. It was safer, it had less adverse events, but pertussis cases have gone through the roof. There's a resurgence in pertussis because of the design of the vaccine, and the vaccinologists know this. They're trying to address it, and so we cannot mandate that something that does not prevent transmission.
The German Corona Committee Foundation reached out to me and asked me to provide all of the documentation to them who are suing the World Health Organization with 1,000 doctors. ...10,000 MDs, and they reached out to me privately to give them a 1.5 hour documentation of Anthony Fauci's knowledge of how he was going to kill people before the pandemic started, how he's still doing it right now while you're seated here. And I'm going to give you some of that information here. And I want to put up a slide. I just have to thank Dr. Rainier Fulmick. Also, just real quickly, I got to get this out of the way. If any of you have loved ones who are being treated in ICUs for any of the variants of COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, you have to write this down, convey it to your loved ones, myfreedoctor.com. It is proven. These doctors will help you get early treatment for COVID-19, get you the prescriptions that you need for free. Go there. Early treatment is the proven option, and these doctors are there standing for you. They will write you free prescriptions, telemedicine, offer them donations, do it. They will save your life. This, if you can see the screen, there's a QR code there. This has all, if you scan this QR code, put in your email, the documents I provided to Dr. Rainier Fulmick, my disease prevention cocktail to protect all of your loved ones from those who are jabbed and those who are not jabbed, but exposed to those who have the shots. Those documents will be sent to you automatically through that code. I've got 10 minutes. You guys want some information? All right, so what did Anthony Fauci know? All right, let's throw up the first slide. Next slide, please. It was up there. February 2020, China was seeking a patent on remdesivir from Gilead Sciences, who manufactures remdesivir, the drug. This is in February 2020. I want you to go to the next slide. This is just the article. Look here. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine last week reported a coronavirus patient in the United States. How many? A coronavirus patient in the United States was found to show an improvement after taking remdesivir, which is also used to treat infectious diseases such as Ebola. This is February 2020. This is the lie. All right, next one. Let's look at the Ebola study. This is what I did in May 2020. I've been in the media ever since to educate you guys the current genocidal attempt and murderous attempts of Anthony Fauci, the NIH, the FDA, the CDC, are all using remdesivir the same way that they used gas chambers to destroy people in Germany. This is how they're doing it and perpetuating those deaths, using a drug in hospitals. This is the actual Ebola study that Anthony Fauci quoted in May 2020, proved, he said, we're going to use this non-FDA approved drug. It's been approved since, but it wasn't before the pandemic. We're going to use this non-FDA approved drug called remdesivir, because it was shown to be safe and efficacious against the Ebola virus in 2018 and 2019. Has anybody actually looked at this study? Because I clicked the link on NIH.gov's website. All of you should do it. This is the study. Ebola virus inside of Africa. They took four regions, gave them all remdesivir and three other experimental drugs. Anthony Fauci said it was proven to be safe and effective against the Ebola virus. So now in this novel virus of the coronavirus, we're going to use it there also. We're going to mandate this one drug. You can't use any other ones, like hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, back in May 2020. Go to the next slide, please. So what did the actual study find? They actually found, you can see here, you see mortality up there? Definition inside the study. They found that remdesivir, in 6 months, the safety board pulled remdesivir from the study, a one-year study, because it killed more people than any of the other three drugs, including ZMapp, which was put in by the FDA and the NIH. So 6 months into the study, they pulled remdesivir, they pulled ZMapp, which was supplied by our government to Africa because it killed more people. How many people did it kill? Remdesivir killed 54% of all people in the study that got the drug.
All right, what about the flu vaccine? Well, they have shown that basically there's no difference, there's no statistical difference if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, whether you get the flu or not. But it's even worse because although that first year it is somewhat effective, it's about 65% effective at preventing symptoms in you, after that it actually has negative efficacy. And I want to address this because it's very important. Vaccines are made to a specific variant, and when that variant mutates, the vaccine no longer recognizes it. And so it's like you're seeing a completely new virus, and because that's so, you actually get more severe symptoms when you're vaccinated against one variant, and then it mutates, and then your body sees the other variant. So there's the potential, and the science shows that, in fact, with the flu, if you get vaccinated in multiple years, you are more likely to get severe disease, you are more likely to have more viral replication, and you are more likely to be hospitalized, both in adults and in children. We are seeing the same thing in COVID with the Delta variant. And so we are mandating that people get a vaccine that could actually make them more sick when they're exposed to the virus. In fact, this week, a paper came out, and what it showed is that with this Delta variant, when you're vaccinated, your body makes antibodies that are supposed to neutralize the virus. But they were supposed to neutralize the old variant. When they see this new variant, what they're doing is they're actually, the antibodies are taking the virus and helping it infect the cells. All right, that science was just published this week. We need to be looking at the science, and we need our policy to reflect the science, and we also need it to reflect our rights.
Next slide, please. Look up here. I'm not lying. This is from the study. Look at the second column from the right, remdesivir. Look below there. 54%. You see that? Mortality rate. All right, next slide, please. He then quoted a second study in May 2020, Anthony Fauci did, that supported the use of remdesivir in the treatment of coronavirus. The Ebola study, by the way, was a lie. No one clicked the link to look at it. I did. This is the other study he mentioned. This was actually done by Gilead Sciences, who makes remdesivir. In early March 2020, they took 53 patients from Japan, Canada, and America who had COVID-19. And they put them on the drug for 10 days. What's the drug? Remdesivir. This is the maker of remdesivir's own trial study. Next slide, please. What did they find? Check this out. 23% in 10 days had serious adverse events. The most common serious adverse events were multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, which is defined as the number one cause of death in all ICUs, by the way. Second, septic shock, acute kidney failure, and hypotension. Look at the next part. 8% had to be discontinued because remdesivir treatment, it worsened or prevented pre-existing kidney failure and multiple organ failure. 8% had to be taken off by days 5 because they were dying as a result of the poison of remdesivir. That's what they found from this study. As a result of these studies, they decided to actually push this on the masses. All of you, this was going to be the drug choice. Why? because it would actually make COVID-19 look more deadly than it really was. One other disgusting thing, Anthony Fauci and our federal health agencies bought up all of the reserves and stock of this experimental drug in 2020. We didn't even let another country have it till the end of October 2020. Do you want to know why America had the most deaths during 2020 in this pandemic than any other country? We were the only country treating people with remdesivir proven to cause acute kidney failure, multiple organ failure, septic shock, and hypotension, all of which are lethal. This was the great setup. So they set this up so that they can murder people, then convince you people were dying of COVID-19. They didn't die of COVID-19. They actually died from remdesivir poisoning causing acute kidney failure. If you just listen to the media, the New York press conferences of all the doctors when when Corona was going throughout New York early on, they were reporting, we've never seen a virus ever attack the kidneys like this one is. You start treating this virus and it attacks the kidneys and shut it down. Not only are we finding that we have limited supply of ventilators, we don't have enough dialysis machines for their kidneys. These doctors had no idea it was never the virus to begin with. Remdesivir was proven in 30% of all people to cause acute kidney failure. Do you know what happens when you shut down the kidneys in somebody? Your kidneys release water from the body. Guess what happens when you shut them down? Your body retains water. Your abdomen fills with water. Your heart fills with water. Your lungs fill with water. Do you know what they call that? Pulmonary edema. You are drowning these people to death with their own fluids, and they can't breathe. They were calling it secondary pneumonia. You have to listen to me. Still today, they are calling it pneumonia from corona. No, it isn't. They are shutting down everybody's kidneys with remdesivir, causing their lungs to fill with fluid, and they are drowning them to death. Do you want to know why this made me so angry? In May 2020, February 2020, I watched a hospital in Dallas, Texas, kill my father-in-law with the same protocols. They are still doing it today, and they are. I'm telling you right now, anybody who's got a loved one in ICUs, please listen to me. Anybody who's got COVID-19, you're going to be threatened with death if you go into a hospital. They have set this up where they're going to use remdesivir. 31% of people treated for COVID-19 will have acute kidney failure. Their lungs will fill with fluid. Right now, they're adding dexamethasone, which has 4% reported kidney failure for all those who get it. So now you're up to 35%. If anyone listening to this has a loved one in a hospital and they have added to that protocol a drug called vancomycin, which is an antibiotic, antibiotics don't treat viruses, by the way, if they put them on there, upwards of 10% of all of those individuals will experience even worsened acute kidney failure. It will stop their heart, pressure on their heart, make them go into a coma and make them unconscious, and they will die. And they will say it was because of COVID-19. This is not true. Yeah, they're doing it to all of them. All right, so this is the mass genocide that they're using, remdesivir. There's a reason why more people died in America than any other country in 2020. We were the only country using remdesivir, and Anthony Fauci was the one that mandated it. Okay, now what else was disgusting? Let's go to the next one. This was the next thing that made me super angry. In October 2020. All right, so now I have a problem with the NIH, with Anthony Fauci, from May 2020, saying we're going to use a drug proven to be effective against Ebola. Was it proven to be effective against Ebola? No, it didn't even make it to the end of the trial. Why is this guy still alive? Number two.
And so, as a PhD who knows the science, I'm in the category of the most vaccine hesitant group. Yes, PhDs are the most vaccine hesitant, followed by people who have less than a high school degree because they know what they don't know and they don't trust their government. And many people, the other group that is very vaccine hesitant, are African Americans. 70% of African Americans have not taken this vaccine. Why? Because they don't trust their government. Do they have reason not to trust their government? Well, between the years of 1930 and 1970, the CDC conducted the Tuskegee experiment, where they took untreated males with syphilis and they refused to treat them. Even after antibiotics became available, they still did not treat them, and they did not tell them that they had syphilis. They told those people that they were there to secure their health, and they did not secure their health. They abused them. You say, well, that was in the past, although I don't think 1970 was that long ago. Well, in 2012, whistleblower William Thompson came forward and said, we published a study that said MMR does not cause autism, but we lied. In fact, we shredded data that showed that when black boys are vaccinated on time, they have increased rates of autism diagnosis. And we shredded it and we left it out of the paper. As an African American and a PhD, I want to ask each of you, are we going to exclude 70% of African American people from the workforce and from education? Right, my ancestors did not work this hard. I come from a family that worked very hard, and I'm very aware that my privileges are dependent on the work of my grandmother and my great-grandmother, and I have great respect for these people that put me where I am. And yet you're telling me that my son will not be able to be educated if, based on the history of African Americans in this country, that he doesn't want to be vaccinated? All right, so I will leave you with that question. Who are we going to exclude from the workforce? Are we going to continue with discrimination and segregation in the United States of America? Thank you.
Number two is the FDA. Ready? This report, go back. You know, look at the date. CBR Plans, a division inside of the FDA. You'll see the FDA logo at the top. This is dated October 22nd, 2020. They were setting up how they were going to evaluate for injuries from vaccines being reported to the government. Once they started going out in December, this is in October, 25-slide presentation. Good luck finding this link now. I have it downloadable. I hope you got the QR code because I'll send you the whole document. Next one. This was slide 16. If you haven't seen any of my presentations, FDA safety surveillance of COVID-19 vaccines. Look at the list of what they knew was going to start being reported to the government as a result of injuries from the coming vaccines. Disgustingly enough, this list, when the same organization, the FDA, 2 months later in December, created the fact sheets to go out with the vaccines to the entire American public, for each vaccine, they're supposed to list the health benefits and the risks associated with those vaccines. The FDA created these fact sheets. Do you know not one of these showed up on that list or on that fact sheet? I call this criminal. They knew it, but they didn't tell you. Just so you know, on this list, three on the side, on the right, two on the left are all related to blood clot disorders. They knew that 2 months before the shots came out. Look at the bottom right. I know I'm almost out of time. Bottom right, you have to be aware of this. This is what we know is coming from the shots. Don't even ignore on the right top. Isn't it odd that death isn't listed first? Pregnancy and birth outcomes, like miscarriages aren't a big deal or birth defects aren't a big deal. We'll list those on the second column. Bottom right, multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. Does this say adults? Does this say teenagers? No, it says in children. The Mayo Clinic defines this condition or disease is a serious condition where multiple organs in a child will become severely inflamed and they can die from it, which includes inflammation of the brain, kidneys, spleen, gut, heart, eyes, all at once. Go to cdc.gov, type in MIS-C, which is that abbreviation. It's already been reported over 4,400 children have been reported with this, and over 40 children in America have died already. And they want to start pushing that on your children come September. I have a huge problem with these health agencies lying to you. Throw up the last slide and I'm done. If you didn't get it, go get it. Go to, if you want to, if you can't, QR code it, write it down. If you're listening at home, thedrardisshow.com. My job is to prevent them from being able to kill your loved ones. If you have a loved one in ICU, MyFreeDoctor.com has lawyers ready to actually contact the hospital and threaten them to put them on other treatments. Do not forget it. You do not have to do what they say. I'm Dr. Artis. Thank you.
When the COVID vaccine is injected into your arm, we now know that only 25% of it actually stays in your arm. And the other 75% is literally collected by your lymphatic system and fed into your circulation. So these little packages of messenger RNA, and by the way, in a single dose of a Moderna vaccine, there are 40 trillion messenger RNA molecules, 40 trillion that are injected into your arm. So 3/4 of these are taken, connected by the lymphatics. They go into your bloodstream in these little packages that are designed to be absorbed into a cell. But obviously, when something's in your circulation, the only cells that they're going to get absorbed into is the cells around your blood vessels. And the place where absorption happens is in the capillary networks. In other words, these are the tiniest vessels where the blood slows right down. These are tiny, tiny vessels. So these little packages of genes are absorbed into the cells around the blood vessels. That's the vascular endothelium. The packages open, the genes are released. Your body then gets to work reading these genes and manufacturing trillions and trillions of COVID spike proteins. Because even though you get 40 trillion genes, each gene can produce many, many COVID spike proteins. So, and the purpose of the spike proteins is that your body recognizes this as a foreign protein and will make antibodies against it so that you're then protected against COVID. That's the idea. But here's where the problem comes. In a virus, in a coronavirus, that spike protein becomes part of the viral capsule. In other words, it's part of like the cell wall around the virus called the viral capsule. But it's not in a virus, it's in your cells. So it therefore becomes part of the cell wall of your vascular endothelium, which means that these cells that line your blood vessels, which are supposed to be smooth so that your blood flows smoothly, now have these little spiky bits sticking out. So it is absolutely inevitable that blood clots will form because your blood platelets circulate around in your vessels. And the purpose of blood platelets is to detect a damaged vessel and block that vessel to stop bleeding. So when the platelet comes through the capillary, it suddenly hits all these little COVID spikes that are jutting into the inside of the vessel. It is absolutely inevitable that a blood clot will form to block that vessel. Now that's how platelets work. These spike proteins will predictably cause blood clots because of where they're in your blood vessels. It is guaranteed. So Dr. Bogdi then said to me, the way to prove this is we need to do a blood test called a D-dimer test to find out if this is really happening. So, because the problem with the blood clots that we hear about through the media that they claim are very rare are the big blood clots. These are the ones that cause strokes and heart attack clots in your brain. Those are the ones that show up on CT scans and CT angiograms and MRIs. The clots I'm talking about are microscopic. These are tiny, they're literally on a capillary level and they are scattered throughout your capillary network. So they are not going to show on any scan. They're just too small and too scattered. So the only way to find out for sure if this predictable mechanism of clotting was actually happening was to do this blood test called a D-dimer. And so the D-dimer is a blood test that shows a recent blood clot. It doesn't show anything else other than a recent blood clot. It won't show an old blood clot. It only shows new blood clots. And so I have been now doing that on my patients, finding people who have recently had their COVID shot within the previous 7 days. It needs to be between 4 and 7 days, and doing a blood test on them called a D-dimer. And so I'm still trying to accumulate more information, but on the ones I have so far, 62% of them have evidence of clotting, which means that these blood clots are not rare. It means that the majority of people are getting blood clots that they have no idea that they're even having. So, Laura Lynn, the most alarming thing about this is that there are some parts of your body, like your heart and your brain and your spinal cord and your lungs, which cannot regenerate. When those tissues are damaged by blocked vessels, they are permanently damaged. So I now have six people in my medical practice with what we call reduced effort tolerance, which means that they just get out of breath much more easily than they used to. I have one fellow that used to walk to my office every week for an arthritis injection, who told me that he could walk 2 miles without any problem. And now after a quarter of a mile, he is absolutely out of breath. And it has been like that for 5 months. So on the basis of this D-dimer test, which proves that the majority of people are clotting, these six people who now have reduced effort tolerance, literally what's happened to them is they've plugged up thousands of tiny capillaries in their lungs. And the terrifying thing about this is not just that these people are now short of breath and can't do what they used to be able to do, but once you block off a significant number of blood vessels through your lungs, your heart is now pumping against a much greater resistance to try and get the blood through your lungs. And the problem, so that causes a condition called pulmonary artery hypertension. It's literally like blood pressure, high blood pressure in your lungs, because the blood can't get through because so many of the vessels are blocked. And the terrifying thing of this is that people with pulmonary artery hypertension usually die of right-sided heart failure within 3 years. So the huge concern about this mechanism of injury is that these shots are causing permanent damage, and we haven't, you know, and the worst is yet to come, because, you know, there are some tissues in your body, like intestine and liver and kidneys, that can regenerate to quite a good degree, but brain and spinal cord and heart muscle and lungs do not. They, when they're damaged, it's permanent. Like all these young people who are now getting myocarditis from these shots, they have permanently damaged hearts. It doesn't matter how mild it is, they will not be able to do what they used to be able to do, because heart muscle does not regenerate.
I got to tell you all, it is a true honor and pleasure to be here. God has blessed me so much. Today is really important to me. Every one of these it's just incredible. It's incredible to see the people, to see God, to feel Him moving in us. It's amazing. Thank you, Clay. Thank you so much. I'm going to talk about something real serious today, and this is a brand new announcement. I'm filing papers in federal court today, so you guys are the first to hear. And yeah, go ahead and post it. It'll be censored in about 6 seconds. But here's what I'm going to say to those that are going to censor this: Google, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Let me tell you what I'm going to say. You are complicit and causing death. And I cannot wait to sue you over and over again. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you what a woman who has incredible courage, who we're calling Jane Doe for right now, she gave me some information. She's an insider. She's a whistleblower. We're submitting to federal court today based on a sworn declaration. Under threat of perjury, this woman attested to this, and she is an expert. We know, based on what she said, that there have been at least 45,000 deaths from this vaccine. I'm going to tell you what I know. I know, based on this woman's testimony, because she has seen the inside of the systems, that there have been 45,000 deaths based on how many people died within 3 days of the vaccine in just one system that's reporting to the federal government. Now, I'm going to tell you what I can't prove. That piece of information, that 45,000 deaths, okay, I want to put that in perspective. 45,000. Look around you. If all of you were dead now, that would not even come close to 45,000. I live in a town of about 10,000 to 12,000. If they killed my entire town, that would not be 45,000. Not a mathematician. Ladies and gentlemen, 45,000. And let me tell you what, there are reportedly around 11 or 12 systems that are reporting deaths and injuries to the government. How many have really died? And why are they covering it up?
Why do I emphasize the spike protein in these prion-like domains so much? Well, two reasons. There are two major prions. One is that prion-like domain at the very top, which is the result of all of the things that humans have put into it for gain of function, the PRRA, the HIV components. But the other one is the HIV glycoprotein 120 that Shi Zhengli first talked about in the early 2000s. HIV glycoprotein itself is a prion, and the research was already published at the time, so Shi Zhengli knew about this. What is a prion disease? This is a picture of a brain, and you can see that most of it looks fairly good. It's pink, but in here you see all these white areas, and when we enlarge that, it looks like a sponge. So doctors, researchers call this spongiform encephalopathy, or a brain that looks like a sponge. What does that translate in general terms? That's mad cow disease. This is the result of a prion infecting a human brain, and it causes heart disease and the inflammothrombotic response that I've been talking about. So anything that puts this spike protein into your body is going to potentially produce this disease. And when they did, and this was in mice, and 95% of the mice died in 2 weeks producing this mad cow disease. In the rhesus macaques, which are the monkey models that are close to humans, these are the areas of the brain that were damaged, and these were the slides under a microscope showing inflammatory cells. All this stained material are inflammatory cells. This area here is what's called a Lewy body, and that Lewy body formation is what causes Alzheimer's disease.
I am telling you, we have someone who has sworn under penalty of perjury that there's been at least 45,000. And my guess, I've been working on this for a while now, is that it's immensely higher number. Immensely. They know it, and they are covering it up, and I want investigations immediately. America's frontline doctors empowered me to file this suit in Alabama. Thank you, Simone. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, all of you that are doing this. Because of that suit, we were able to make these connections and define this. 45,000. You're going to get censored when you talk about this. And you know what? If they try and censor the risk, I would say that's complicity. And I cannot wait to find out in court.
The next slide shows the ultimate bioweapon being prion. So this is our eighth slide, prion disease. And you're going to see over here in the corner, you're going to see a lot of red stained area. These are prions that are moving from one neuron to another neuron. And then the other images to the right of that show this sponge brain or mad cow disease and how brains shrink. And in the next slide, we're going to see the actual bioweapon comparison itself. where this glycoprotein 120 attaches to what's called a sialic raft receptor, which was the work that I was doing in the early 90s that got everybody in the government stressed, because this is what's necessary for them to target the cells using this virus. And so the virus is the missile, and the warhead is actually the prion disease. In the next series of slides, the first one, there is information about treatments that are available for people. If they get infected as outpatients, you get infected from somebody, you have runny nose, aches and pains, that type of thing. There's four different treatments that we laid out here that run the cost anywhere between $40 and $95. The doses are there for you to share with your doctors. In the next slide, the same thing is done for inpatients, which is a little small, but you can take and stop the frame and enlarge it, or go to the website and download it so you can see it, and you can see the transition between outpatient to inpatient treatments. And then finally, the next slide shows what types of treatments are available for people who've been vaccinated. The research now shows that the simple drug called heparin that you can stick under your skin twice a day actually blocks the spike protein from attaching itself to our cells. So good old-fashioned, simple, it's cheap, heparin turns out to be a treatment for this virus and for anybody who's had vaccines or shedding problems. Two important pieces of information. First off, if you've had the infection SARS-CoV-2 and you're wondering whether you have immunity to this virus, you do. The paper that was just published by Nielsen in this slide shows that people have antibodies, both IgG and IgA, to the entire spike protein, that regional binding area, the N-terminal domain, and the nuclear capsid of the virus, and that independent upon how severe that infection was, you've got immunity to it. You don't need to be able to measure antibodies in your bloodstream, because you don't make antibodies to everything that you've been exposed to. You make memory cells. And that's important, because the next slide over here shows, or in this slide rather on the right side, shows that if you've been exposed to influenza or cytomegalovirus, which means a big virus which causes a number of diseases, you already have T cell immunity to SARS-CoV-2, and you don't need to be vaccinated.
So let's see, 45,000, let's see what they do. I want to challenge you all, okay? Since we can't talk about the 45,000 murders, because people weren't able to give informed consent because they've been covering up the risk, let's try and get 45,000 to trend on Twitter. We can't call it murders, but maybe we can. Let's try and get it to trend on Facebook. Just post everywhere you can. Now, I want to suggest maybe you go to Clout Hub or something decent, because God knows Facebook and Twitter suck. Am I allowed to say that in a church? I'm sorry. I'm very fired up. I am. Ladies and gentlemen, the 80% failure rate in Israel, they don't work. The absolute risk reduction from these vaccinations, 1%. You're being experimented on for 1%, and they want to experiment on my babies. I have an 8-year-old and 11-year-old. As God is my witness, hell will freeze over before I stand down on this. So I apologize. I'm more than a little bit frustrated, and I've been very eager to share this information because we need it everywhere. If you're at home, wherever you are, 45K. Let's call it the 45K initiative, right? We want everyone to hear this. I want investigations in Congress. I want Nancy Pelosi to call investigations. Do you care about our kids? She's claiming to. Let's see what she does. I want Adam Schiff, who talked about the seriousness of the accusations with Brett Kavanaugh. Well, I'm accusing you guys of covering up thousands of deaths.
Which means that the vaccine passport, quote unquote, which is really a social credit system, knows everyone who's at that table. And if you're talking about, you know, resistance to the system, if you're talking about staging a protest or writing an op-ed or mobilizing support for a representative to pass a bill to roll back this system, the platform will know. And there's a functionality that creates maps of networks of people. And as you all swipe in your vaccine passport to that cafe or to that restaurant or even to that living room, right, it is geolocating you, and it can tabulate the searches you all have done historically, and it can read what happened on your social media as a group, and you as a group can be blackballed. Your social credit score can dial down, or you're all positive. Right? None of you ever gets to shop for food. None of you ever gets your children into school.
Well, we're asking for a temporary restraining order, TRO, and what that means is we're asking for the court to temporarily halt any injections of this COVID, well, they're calling it a vaccine, I'm not sure it is, but this COVID injection into kids under 16 years old. And there's a lot of reasons for that and a lot of theories behind it, but the number one thing is it's absolutely against the law to experiment on kids without doing a risk-benefit analysis. And the bottom line is according to CDC statistics, which are all false and inflated, there is zero statistical risk to children for COVID-19. They don't spread it. And so any experimental drug use on kids to fight that is just, it's danger for no reason. This drug was not tested. There is no safe and effective drug for COVID. I mean, they don't know what it is. You want safe and effective? Try vitamin D and zinc. Try hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. By the way, the hydroxychloroquine thing, the guys who said that that was causing harmful side effects, I've heard that they're on their way to jail because they OD'd people in that study so that they could get bad results. This whole thing is one of the most corrupt and horrendous things that has ever happened in the history, in modern history, probably. It's crazy.
At Daily Clout, we've started a campaign to showcase model legislation at the state level to ban vaccine passports. It also, by the way, violates the Americans with Disabilities Act, which forbids you from even asking about someone's medical status and forbids you from denying anyone access to goods or services based on physiology. It's totally illegal. But it also violates the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. As a Democrat, I'm horrified that the Biden administration is rolling this out. But this is beyond partisanship. You know, Tories are rolling it out in Britain. In Israel, Netanyahu rolled it out. In 6 months, or no, 4 months, Israel crushed civil society because people who don't sign on to this pass system are second-rate citizens, and people even who do sign on to it who are dissidents are hounded and shamed and ostracized and surveilled.
This is asking them to stop injections in kids under 16 immediately and hopefully through the duration of the trial. And then we're going to have a complaint that's going to follow. And that complaint is going to ask them to stop giving these injections without informed consent and without ensuring that it's safe. They've lied. It's not safe and effective. The only people saying that are Fauci and his crew, who are all making millions of dollars off them.
Would you talk about the federal Department of Justice allowing mandated injections under the FDA emergency use authorization?
When you don't have a favorable position that's taken by somebody other than you, in like that would have any sort of interest, it's difficult. But when we're talking about the federal Department of Justice saying that you can, it's just another government agency saying that it's okay to violate people's rights. You know, really, that's what you're getting down to. So the federal government can be sued if they're mandating it, which they can't under the Constitution anyways. But what we're really talking about is state governments mandating it, local municipalities mandating it. The federal government can mandate it for employees and things like that. But I don't see the federal government having the authority under the Constitution to mandate it. You know, if you think back to Obamacare, one of the big issues was the mandate on Obamacare, and that was done away with. It was challenged so many different ways, and ultimately they had to, in the bill, say that it was a tax, which the federal government does have the authority to do, in order to get around what they knew was going to be the mandate issue, because the federal government doesn't have that mandate authority like that.
David, as you mentioned, protections against a mandatory shot can change depending on what state you are in. Healthcare workers in various states, including California and New Jersey, are under a mandate to get the injection. There's a case in Texas that you referenced involving, from this date now, 153 Texas hospital workers that have been fired or resigned because of the mandatory COVID experimental gene therapy policy. But what are your thoughts as millions will be forced to take the injections or lose their jobs? I'm anticipating many cases against the federal government.
So I anticipate, I would go back to the earlier comment regarding the Department of Justice. I don't believe the federal government can mandate these. Now, the Department of Justice is encouraging it, but I don't think they have the authority, the statutory authority, nor the constitutional authority to mandate anything, unless we're talking about their specific employees. With regard to the states mandating it, there's definitely, in my opinion, causes of action that could be sought. Again, under the Constitution, the right to be free from government intrusion into your body, which was established, like I said, by Roe v. Wade, there's definitely things that could be done. But it's really down to a state-level issue. If the state is mandating it, then the state could be acting in violation of the Constitution. Those would be federal lawsuits, but filed against the state. And that's different from the nurses in Texas that you had just mentioned. The nurses were suing a private employer. So we fall back to the same issue that the Constitution doesn't protect you against the private actor. There is no right to, you know, free speech on a website that's owned by a private company like Facebook, because it doesn't apply. They're not a state actor unless and until court decides that they are. But if they are a private actor, you have no constitutional rights against that. So it's you have to go at the state level, not the federal level, with regard to private employers. Now, Michigan, we have some causes of action. In Texas, it sounds like they have very similar causes of action, but I don't know if they're identical. New York, don't know what the law is with regard to New York on the individual employer side, but when you have the city and the mayor mandating vaccines in order to enter a private a private business, now you have a state actor involved, and now your constitutional rights do come into play. And I would expect to see lawsuits filed in New York, even though I don't think they're going to go very far, just given the demographic makeup of the judiciary in New York. They will set the groundwork for the appeals and eventually working their way up. But I would anticipate lawsuits being filed in New York based off of that, because it's now a government-mandated action, in my opinion, violates the Constitution.
I appreciate you going into detail. Would HIPAA laws provide protection from a shot that carries an FDA emergency authorization? And in the context of the so-called vaccine passport?
So, yes, I believe that HIPAA laws would provide a protection from individuals having to release confidential medical information to private employers, to restaurants. People, I've seen people carrying around their COVID vaccine verification around their neck, almost like a dog tag. They don't have to do that under HIPAA. They're voluntarily doing it under HIPAA, but they don't have to. And so anything that requires you to release confidential medical information that's not to a medical provider or not to a court under some sort of other authorization, then yeah, it would be absolutely, in my opinion, a violation of HIPAA. So you also have that angle as well with regard to especially the New York mandate. We haven't gotten that far in Michigan yet. Michigan, they're still using the carrot over the stick, but I definitely see a cause of action there for HIPAA.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.
This is a promise from our Father, and there's going to be a